television year, like the tax year, begins and ends in April. Last night's BAFTA Awards, in which Peter Kosminski's Channel 4 drama Brits beat the BBC's Cranford, and the comedy Gavin and Stacey took two trophies, is a sort of end-of-term prize-giving. But if today is the start of the new TV year, the timetable fittingly begins with a powerful and unusual programme. Channel 4's The Doctor Who Hears Voices combines reality and drama to question the treatment of the mentally ill in Britain. Clinical psychologist Dr. Rufus May, who has himself suffered in the past from mental illness, plays himself in the case study of Ruth, a young hospital doctor who's been diagnosed as schizophrenic after hearing voices urging her to commit suicide. For reasons of medical confidentiality, an actress recreates Ruth's side of the consultations, in which May, sounding more like an exorcist than a psychologist, adopts a voice himself and talks to the imposter in Ruth's head.
Thanks very much for agreeing to talk to us. And how long have you been in Ruth's life?
I've always been here.
Because Ruth says that you've only been around for a couple of months.
She's only just started listening.
What's your role in Ruth's life?
I'm here to make her kill herself. And I won't leave until she does.
Why should she kill herself?
Because she's weak.
Ruth Wilson as Ruth, with Rufus May as himself, in The Doctor Who Hears Voices, directed by Leo Regan. Seeing the title in the TV listings, it struck me as very clever to hide the words Doctor Who, one of the most popular current shows, in the middle of the film's name. So when I spoke to Rufus May and Leo Regan about the serious issues raised by this programme, I started with that lighter one. Is The Doctor Who Hears Voices a deliberately cunning title?
No, I wish it was cunning. We had lots of titles. And I was worried about The Doctor Who Hears Voices, people slagging it off thinking it's another Channel 4 title. But actually it came from a couple of people at Channel 4. It was originally called Mental, which they thought would put people off. But we can call it cunning if you like. You know, we'll take the praise.
And that turns Rufus into Doctor Who in this context. So it's a very unusual film. Who approached who initially, Rufus?
Leo approached me. I think he'd got in contact with a group called Mad Pride, who I've had some involvement with, and that led him to me and started to come and visit my self-help groups and shadow me a bit and got to know each other.
And we also settled out the use of the word mad, because it's certainly against BBC guidelines, but it's used consistently in the film. You accept that word, Rufus?
Yeah, I think it needs reclaiming, really. We've got to sort of reclaim that ghettoised identity. I think it depends how it's used and who uses it, like a lot of language that's reclaimed.
So it would in that context be the same as queer, for example, being reclaimed by gay people?
Sure, sure.
But then if it's used by a columnist in a newspaper, it's different?
Yeah, yeah, unless he's very clever.
Leo, the structure of it, and people are very alert to these things now. We're talking on the day after Paul Watson got a big documentary prize, despite a controversy over one of his films. But in that context, it's interesting. There are two time schemes going on. There's what appears to be contemporaneous, in which you're interviewing Rufus about a patient. And then there are what clearly can't be contemporaneous, which are reconstructions of his conversations. So, in effect, there are two films cut together.
Three. Because I'm also recreating my interviews with the real Ruth. So there's the improvisations of Rufus. And we talked a lot about how much to be explained, as how confusing is it, and we felt that the important thing was to tell the story. I mean, this is a true story. I don't know what you want to call it. I don't really like drama documentary, but it's a true story. I could call it a documentary.
But because it's a hybrid, this, Rufus, it must have been quite striking for you, unusual, to be recreating these conversations with an actress. But how close are they to the real conversations?
They felt very real, actually. I found it exhausting, especially doing them over and over again. I guess I could imagine Ruth was the real Ruth, and she was good to work with. It was a meeting of two worlds, really, entertainment and the caring profession. But we got on well. I think she'd make quite a good psychologist.
And the words that the actress is using, where are they taken from? Are they verbatim or what?
More or less. We documented my meetings, often audio taping them, and that was turned into the script. But some of it was improvised around that, so the feeling's there. It's not always word for word. There's definitely an authenticity. I think it comes across, but that's not for me to judge.
No, it certainly feels authentic. The thing that didn't to me was the locations for these consultations, because you're walking down a residential road, you're in a park, you're on a tube train. Presumably, Leo, that's dramatic conceit.
We changed details for obvious reasons.
But locations,
But locations, in terms of working with Rufus, this is exactly what he does. Right. His location, as far as my understanding, and I filmed him with lots of different people, in parks, he doesn't like actually being in offices. I mean, it's not, Rufus can explain this himself, but I filmed everywhere. He would play squash with people, he will try and break down this idea of doctor-patient relationship. So actually, we didn't use the exact same locations that they had used, but they were very similar.
So Rufus, this is how you do it. You're chasing people down the street, you're going into parks and all the rest of it, while carrying out your interviews.
Well, I work differently in the NHS. I can work more creatively in my more independent work. But in both settings, I do use nature a lot. I really believe in the healing power of nature, and that walking by rivers or through woods does seem to really help people get grounded and trust me more.
And clearly this is massively condensed, because we're looking at a film of about an hour long, but without giving away again too much, because it does have a dramatic element, but the process that happens, there is a dramatic breakthrough at one point. A certain kind of interviewing produces a really quite remarkable result. But I say it's condensed, but that effect can be achieved in consultation.
Yes. I do it regularly.
But that will be months and months of interviewing before that kind of breakthrough.
No, not necessarily. I've had dramatic results like that in one-off interviews. Sometimes, yes, it could take months and months. But, yeah, I'm not offering myself forward as a magician.
Although you are making very bold and, to some, it would seem magical and almost supernatural claims that there is no such thing as schizophrenia. Now, as you well know, there are numerous homicides and even more suicides that have been attributed to schizophrenia. It's a very, very bold thing to say that it doesn't exist.
Well, it's like the term cretin or moron. That used to be a medical term that was accepted. It's become a term of misunderstanding and abuse. And I think we need to... it's not scientific. It doesn't tell us about cause, content of people's experiences or outcomes. So we need to drop it, really. And the media kind of have demonised people who hear voices and use schizophrenia to couch those ideas.
But it's not just about terminology, it's about treatment, isn't it? You're arguing that if people who have been, for the want of a better word, have been diagnosed as schizophrenic or bipolar, if they were treated without medication, if they were treated in your way, would we have fewer of these homicides, fewer of these suicides?
I mean, I'm always putting the person, what they want, at the centre, so negotiation is key. I'm not always working totally without medication. I just think medication is overused, and what this film shows is that you can work completely without medication through a crisis, a mad set of experiences.
Leo, you presumably thought about the responsibility towards Rufus, because they're different cases, but Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who used television to popularise his view of the MMR vaccine, it had quite serious consequences for him. He spent most of the last few years going before various professional tribunals, and it's affected his career. Rufus does raise that in the film, the possibility that it will bring people against him and they will try to kick him out. Did you talk to him about what might happen as a result of this film?
Sure. We talked about it. It's in the film.
I said, yeah, you know, it's there in the film.
Yeah, it was a concern. There was lots of concerns. And, you know, I think not only was Rufus courageous in also displaying his own vulnerabilities, but also the real Ruth, as we call her, very courageous. She didn't have to have this story told about her. You know, she also wanted this story told. It felt to me that it was very important to tell this story, because it had such a powerful impact, you know, on her life and on people around her. People I've seen working with Rufus, the impact seems to be overwhelmingly positive in most of the cases that I've seen.
And Rufus, as we say, this is discussed in the film, but there may be consequences for you professionally, but you're prepared to take those, risk those.
Yeah, I think the risk is worth taking. I think we need to tell the truth about what's going on, that people's experiences are meaningful, that there are big risks in the kind of technological, bureaucratic approach we have to mental health, and that damages people. and that so very rarely told that story, how medication can, a bureaucratic approach can damage people and write them off. And I think this film tells a story about an alternative approach, that healing is an art, not a science.
Dr. Rufus May and Leo Regan, the Doctor Who Hears Voices, goes out tonight on Channel 4 at 10 o'clock. This is Front Row on BBC Radio.